Good morning. It is 8:21. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves. Joining me on the phone lines right now, we're talking to U.S. District Representative, First District Representative, Congressman Rick Crawford, joining us here on KASU. Mr. Crawford, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Hey, good to be with you.
One thing I was wanting to ask you about yesterday, there was an interview that Roby Brock had played. We do carry some of the Talk Business and Politics shows, and he had an interview with you, and you were talking about some reservations you had about an agricultural mitigation package, the $12 billion in aid, and whether that would be something that would even be needed. Can you kind of explain a little bit more about that, please?
Yeah, so, I mean, we have the program out there as it's been brought up as a backstop. It's you know, it's fine. It's WTO compliant and all those kinds of things. But I question the need if, you know, that's the whole point of why we have our programs. Yes, farmers can benefit from it, but I think that it probably is unnecessary in the big picture. I'm glad the president is taking action to try to support agricultural communities and recognizing the need for a strong, vibrant ag economy. But it really kind of, this is extraneous to the programs that already exist. I mean, so, you know, the soybean markets are above reference, so they wouldn't have triggered a payment anyway. So that's the bulk of this program. $1.65 a bushel is targeting soybeans, and it just seems like, you know, we're probably not going to go below reference, but even if we do, that's the whole point of having the PLC program in place anyway. So why we would need at this point to come in with that, I'm trying to figure that out. I think more than anything, I think this is a move to, you know, to indicate a strong level of support from the White House for U.S. agriculture, and in that vein, I understand it. But as a point of policy, I'm not sure that it was necessary.
Well, one of the things I think that has been an area of criticism by your Democratic opponent has been that you've been very supportive of President Trump in this trade war, even though that he's claiming that there's been damage or there will be damage to soybean farmers. And how would you respond to that?
Well, I mean, that just shows a complete ignorance of agriculture, and I guess that's to be expected from somebody with his base of experience, as limited as it is. But the reality is that, you know, Donald Trump is not trying to start a trade war. Donald Trump is trying to end a trade war. We've been in a trade war for almost 20 years with Chinese without any kind of willingness to fight back. And so what we see now is a president, regardless of what some of these uninformed voices might say, the president is doing something that past administrations, Democrat and Republican, really didn't have the stomach for. And that is to say, China, we're not going to allow you to lie, cheat, steal your way into a prominent role in the global community, economically speaking, that tees up your military expeditionary interests. So that's just not going to happen. So the president recognizes the economic threat, their belligerence. He recognizes their strategic threat from a military standpoint, and knowing that they're using their economy to achieve that goal, and they're doing it at our expense with the cheating that they've done at every turn. They've been in the WTO since 2001, and they have yet to follow the rules of the WTO. They failed to report on agricultural commodities, which skews the market in their favor. You name it, you show me a rule, and I'll show you a rule they've broken. They don't play by the rules, and it's time that they be held to account.
You expect the Chinese market to come back at some point, or do you think the U.S. soybean market will have to evolve into a different direction?
Well, these are some of the things that details people conveniently leave out. For example, the Chinese just bought 3 boatloads of American soybeans post tariff, and with no tariff in. And the point being that their demand picture is not changing. They are demand inelastic. They have 1.4 billion people, and they don't have the ability to feed themselves. If there's one strategic vulnerability that they have, that's it. They can't feed themselves, relying on other nations to feed their 1.4 billion population. So U.S. soybeans will necessarily have to enter the Chinese market. They may not do it directly. They may do it indirectly through other countries buying up U.S. soybeans to meet sales to China, but the fact of the matter is that demand picture is not changing. And I would also say that I'm a little less concerned about whether or not they go directly, because they did go directly as recently as 2 weeks ago. And then that also brought up the opportunity for the European Union. The Chinese market represents about 95 million metric tons. The European Union is number two at 14.5 million. It's a very distant second. However, we are positioned to capture the lion's share of the EU market because, for a variety of reasons, we're a better option. We're a little bit cheaper than the Brazilians, and we're closer. So they save money. And the president just hammered out a deal with the EU that would be tariff-free coming and going, and they specifically mentioned soybeans, and almost immediately there was a purchase of U.S. soybeans at zero tariff. So we're seeing that, in fact, what I've been telling folks around the district for the last several months and what, these dissenting voices fail to recognize is that, these commodities are fungible on the global market, and U.S. Exports are significant. We're number three exporter of soybeans in the world. And so we're going to continue to be competitive. And the tariffs notwithstanding, the $8.50 range that we're in now was forecast well before the tariff announcement was even made. And so farmers saw it coming, and many of them booked at over $10. So it's not near as bad as what some of these uninformed voices would like us to believe. And the other thing is that farmers have exhibited and are exhibiting a high degree of strategic patience, knowing that at the end of this deal, they're going to come out better for it, because we'll have a China that is a little more inclined to play by the rules, knowing that they've got a different president that's not willing to just, roll over and take what they have to offer.
Your opponent has said that he's been talking to farmers who are not so patient. And so I was going to ask you about that. Where does that patience come from?
It comes from an understanding that they know they've been cheated for years and years and years, and recognizing that if they had to endure a little bit of short-term discomfort, it would be worth it in the long term, because farmers have to be long-term strategic thinkers if they want to stay in the business. So I don't know which farmers this individual's been talking to, but I've been in the ag business most of my adult life, and I have a whole lot of farmers who have my cell number. And the communication that I have with farmers is certainly bearing that out, that they recognize that the president has taken the right course here to make sure that we have a long-term positive with regard to our engagement in the global marketplace, and specifically with China.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU. What are your thoughts on President Trump altering the North American Free Trade Agreement? Kind of your thoughts on his direction in trade?
Well, I think that it was it's good. I think we've still got to bring Canada into the fold, and I think they'll do that. I think probably within a month we'll have Canada joining the agreement. But as it stands right now, I think that the agreement looks pretty good. He said he was going to do this, and he's done it. And so, I guess one of the things that's interesting to point out is he believed that the term NAFTA had negative connotations, and so he's discarding the term NAFTA. It's no longer called NAFTA, but in effect, it's the same kind of deal that we're having with Mexico and hopefully Canada here within the next several weeks, that they'll be brought in, and we'll have a good agreement with these two important trading partners that are our neighbors to the north and south, and we'll have an agreement in place that serves the interests of all parties and not just one or the other.
Mr. Crawford, one thing I was going to ask you, well, let's switch gears. We just have a few more minutes here, but I was going to ask you about, I know that you're going to be having a debate on AETN in October, but there's already been challenges for additional debates besides that. Are you willing? Are you open for that?
Well, I mean, every day is a debate. When you have people out there, blasting ignorant tweets based on everything but facts, there's really no point in trying to engage that kind of rhetoric. And I think you kind of, just let the people decide. Folks have known me for a long time. I've been serving this district now for four terms, and my record is clear and speaks for itself. You can like it or you cannot, and the voters will make a determination of of which candidate they're more comfortable with. But I find that, you know, candidates who are really kind of circling the drain with regard to the quality of their campaign start to usually try to gain attention through earned media because they don't have the resources to mount an adequate campaign to get their message out. So they try to leverage media coverage to that end. And so if that means, you know, crying for more debates, then that's what they'll do. And I don't really think that's indicated at this point.
There are predictions of a blue wave in November. How concerned are you about that? How do you think Republicans will fare in November with what some are calling a Democratic blue wave?
Yeah, the candidates that are calling it that are the ones that I just mentioned, the ones that don't have any resources to fund their campaign. And so a blue wave is going to be barely a blue trickle, in my opinion. It's not as though that historically the party in power might lose some seats in the midterm of the first-term presidency. So I do expect we're probably going to lose some Republican seats, but it will be a far cry from any kind of a blue wave that some of these people are touting.
Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate you. We look forward to talking to you next month. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU.